Today I'm going to be teaching about the initiator inquirer process. And the reason we're going to have three sessions and maybe even more is that it's my experience that it takes a while. It, like, this whole thing sounds really simple on the surface. It sounds super easy, but my experience of teaching it now, probably for 25 years, is that it takes a while for therapists to really get it in their bones and know how to use it, because it is an art form to use this really well. And it's also probably your very best friend as a couples therapist, because it gives you a way to structure sessions. It gives you a way to really know what goes on actually out of the room between people, and why their conversations fall apart, or why they're not able to resolve conflict. And it gives you a way to start really helping people develop the capacities that they need to be able to be present in a really intimate relationship. And so, and like, one of the reasons I've asked Lisa and Leah to stand in for the group, and then we'll take questions beyond that, is I want this to be somewhat of a discussion, even though I am going to be teaching and showing some slides. But I want to know what's making sense, what you're getting, and what isn't making sense, or just how to make this a really good learning experience for all of you. And like I said, doing this well is much more of an art than a science. So I'm going to share my screen. And whoops, let's see, Lincoln, are you seeing my screen?
I am.
Okay, so let me get to the PowerPoint, and here we go. Okay, so you've got the slide showing, Lincoln?
Yep.
Okay, all right, super. Whoops. I always forget. Okay. So I put up here actually a quote that Pete and I wrote in the Tell Me No Lies book. And it's a quote that just sort of sets the stage for this. And we wrote, it's very easy to be considerate and loving to your partner when everything is great, when the vistas are magnificent, you're happy, there's no stress. But we all know that that's not life all of the time. And when it gets bone-chilling cold, you're hungry, you're tired, your partner's testy or withdrawn, or they're complaining maybe about what you did or how you got them into a particular mess, it's when you get tested. And for all of us, our ability to be a good partner, who we are as a person, it gets tested. And of course, we know we get triggered, and in that state of being triggered, we can blame, we can fight, we can attack, or we can really gather up our internal resources and become more and more of the person that we aspire to be and that we want to be, and really, you know, being able to be a good partner. So if anybody knows what this is, PONMLK, if anybody knows what it is, please write it in the chat. And I'll come back later to saying what it is and how it applies to the initiator inquirer. Again, just take a second and write in the chat if you know what PONMLK actually is. So to understand how to use the initiator inquirer, it does mean having a good sense in your gut about what differentiation is. Because the initiator inquiry process was developed as a way of supporting and building more effective differentiation in each partner. And I'm going to give you a couple of definitions of, of differentiation. And one of those is the one from Murray Bowen, who, other than the object relations theory, he's one of the first people who wrote about differentiation. And he described it as the degree of resilience to the interpersonal contagion of anxiety. And another way that I sometimes talk about that is if you can think about two tuning forks, and you know, if a tuning fork is vibrating and you bring another tuning fork close to it or touch it, it will also begin to vibrate. And that's what happens with emotions in couples' relationships. What happens is if your partner is upset or you walk in the house and they're agitated, it's very easy to get agitated yourself or to pick up on that anxiety. And the way that couples are able to resolve really challenging moments is that when one person is upset or angry or they're vibrating, the other person is able to come in close and relate, be connected, but not pick up on the anxiety or not escalate along with them. And they're able to actually hold steady, hold firm, and be able to either ask good questions or be supportive, or you know, not have the anxiety that's being experienced be debilitating for the relationship. Now, Pete and I have defined differentiation early in our work as the active ongoing process of defining yourself, being open and revealing who you are. When you do that, it's inevitable that you're going to see differences between you and your partner. And as those differences emerge, people are going to at times be clarifying boundaries, and they're going to have to manage the discomfort that comes from being more open and risking that kind of openness and intimacy. And sometimes it means saying really hard things that feel very scary or feel like, you know, this is going to result in a separation or a loss of the relationship, which is one of the reasons that a lot of people hide and don't differentiate with each other. And again, for Leah and Lisa, if you have questions anytime, feel free to interrupt me. So differentiation has two parts to it. One is the ability to identify and express important parts of yourself. So that means that you will be actively sharing thoughts, feelings, wishes, and desires with your partner. And there's also what we call other differentiation, which it has to do with actually the ability to be present, to be curious, and to, you know, actually ask your partner or be present with your partner. And when you do that, and especially when a couple does that over time, they really begin to learn a lot more about each other that can help them maintain a congruent memory over time of who the partner actually is, which enables them to be much more resilient when things go bad. And you guys have heard me teach before about the especially hostile, angry couples. Many of them did not have a base of solid object constancy in their early life. And so that for them, it's especially hard to remember who the partner is or to hold on to that image and have that memory. And so, you know, this will be one of the things when we look at some sessions later in the year about how you help people remember the moments that their partner really was there for them, or remember that those moments of connection that they actually shared with each other. So differentiation is an evolving process. It evolves over time, and it's, you know, when we looked at the paper exercise, we looked at, in fact, how you could see where the differentiation was in each partner. So if you have a sense of how differentiation evolves, it can help you with a focus in the initiator-inquirer process. So for example, if somebody is unable to internally self-reflect, they can't stop and ask themselves, what am I feeling or what am I thinking or why does something matter to me? They're gonna have a really hard time both getting things for themselves in their life that matter to them, but also working things out in a successful way with their kids, with their partners. So the first step of differentiation is just that ability to pause and ask yourself, what am I feeling? Or what am I thinking? Or what am I wishing for? Then if somebody is able to be clearer about what they're thinking or feeling, the question is, are they able to bring it up and express it congruently without blame? I mean, for example, is somebody able to say, I'm feeling really sad today, or I'm feeling lonely, or I'm feeling excited, or I'm feeling angry. But they're able to express it in a way that owns it and that it sits with them rather than blaming the partner for what it is they're experiencing. When this goes on over time, what you have is people begin to develop the awareness. First of all, the awareness that my partner is a separate and different person than me, and they begin to accept that. I've been doing some interviews lately with some successful couples who work together so that they're both married and working together. And a woman that I interviewed this week said a really interesting thing. She said, over the years that we've been together, I have come to realize that we are 70% alike and 30% different. And what we've done in our business is we've figured out a way to use the 70% where we're similar, but separate out the decision-making in those areas where we're really, really different in that 30%. And so we're not always in conflict, because we recognize that that 30% exists and it probably will always exist. So I thought that was a really good example of some effective differentiation from them to recognize those areas of difference and then be able to begin to use or do things with those. Again, as people get that awareness, then they're able to respond, they're able to listen, they're able to hear, And they have much more effective responses to each other. And so they're not as likely to get into escalated fights or as likely to avoid conflict either, because they have a sense of their confidence and their ability to hold steady, like the tuning fork, to hold steady when they're having a discussion about something that may be challenging. And over time, couples with high levels of differentiation are able to create both solutions and create an environment that supports the desired changes. Pete and I sometimes have used the example because he has a much, much higher tolerance for clutter than I do and for disarray in the house than I do. And at the beginning, it was very hard for me not to just blow up and go crazy. Sometimes when I'd walk in and the house would look like a hurricane had been through it. And I had to learn over time to be able to stroke progress, be able to support progress, and to recognize when he was doing things for me, not for him, instead of seeing it as just inevitable that he should do it. So a few other ways that you can recognize differentiation in your clients, again, we've talked about this. Do they initiate? Do they bring things up? Do they do that self-reflection? Are they able to recognize the difference between thinking and feeling? I'm sure all of you have sat with individual clients or with couples, and you ask them what they're feeling, and the response is something like, well, I think it would be much better if he or she just did X, Y, or Z. Don't even realize that they're not able to express an emotion. Do people respond to their partners as really separate from themselves, or do they expect them to be an extension of themselves? If they expect them to be an extension of themselves, they'll expect them to be very similar and to do things the same way. I was working with a couple the other day, another couple who are trying, they're much lower differentiation than the other couple that I just mentioned. And he wants his wife to take a very active role in the business, but he won't get out of her way to have her do things her way. So everything has to be done his way. And it's very hard for him to see how debilitating that is, or how impossible it's going to be for her to step up when she has to be a mirror image of him. Another way you can tell is how people respond to periods of separation. It's very, very common for couples to have big fights before somebody goes to the airport or somebody's leaving home for a while. And the separation anxiety that they experience about being apart and the symbiosis that they have created with each other being disturbed can lead to a lot of difficulty. And last, is there the ability for internal self-soothing, for self-management, or is there that constant expectation that all of that is going to come from somebody else or from my partner? I loved a quote from F. Scott Fitzgerald when he said, "The mark of a first-rate intelligence is to hold on to two competing ideas and still function." And I use that quote, this quote, sometimes when I'm teaching the Initiator Inquirer to a couple, because people can kind of get, they understand this quote, and it speaks to the challenge of being a really good inquirer. So I put here actually a couple of, I sometimes ask clients when they're terminating to write just a paragraph or two about what they learned or what they got from. And I really liked these comments from clients who worked hard on differentiation. And one man wrote, "The area where I needed her to be just like me were those where I couldn't hold on to myself very well and where I really didn't want to grow." I thought it was a good description of part of what he learned as he was able to let go of that just in, you know, incessant in being so insistent that she be like him. And another person wrote, "I learned to hold on to my reality and calm myself while listening to his reality. Now I can be mad at something he does and not deprive myself of sex for weeks at a time." So this was a woman who, became much more able to see him as a separate person and understand that he was different than she was. And even if she was mad, that wasn't all encompassing. It didn't take up everything when she would get mad at something he did. So over time, couples who are able to get a good solid base of differentiation, our relationships that become more vibrant, the relationships evolve, people can be in them and not compromise core values and beliefs. I have a couple that I see right now where one is a Democrat and one is a Republican, and that can be very challenging at particular moments, but they are each able to hold on to their own and sometimes have heated discussions, but they're not just working on changing each other. Differentiation helps people maintain attachment. It helps to work with conflict, to negotiate. to keep intimacy ongoing and also to prevent sexual boredom appointment. So we're going to, now I'm going to really talk about the initiator inquirer process. And what I want you to come away from today with is a real understanding of the structure of it, an understanding about the importance of preparing people well before you just dump this on them, and that you work to help them have motivation to do it. And we, like I said, we may not get to everything today, and that's fine, because we want to take the time to actually have you get it and be able to go out over the next couple of weeks and start using this more. Now, with some couples, I introduce this very early in therapy. With other couples, it's much longer, because I know they can't be successful and they won't be successful, and I don't want to set up a failure kind of experience. So when I'm describing it, I say, I'm going to teach you a process that's going to help you when you guys have things that you want to talk about that in the past have been difficult, or where you haven't gotten to good resolutions. And when you do that, it's important that you do what kids do in kindergarten, which is kids learn to take turns. And as adults, when we're doing communication, we do just the opposite of that. We don't take turns. So we're going to divide it up where one of you is an initiator, one of you is an inquirer. And a lot of people will start calling it the inquisitor. And I'll say, you know, inquisitor has kind of a negative connotation to it. And an inquirer is somebody who's more open. So in the initiate, the role of the initiator essentially is to bring up one issue and one topic only. And you guys also know that some people are all over the place and it's very difficult for them to focus and land on one topic. So you want them to be able to focus on and bring up and define one topic and to state what that is without blame, without criticism, without name calling, and to express the thoughts and feelings that they have about that particular issue. And the most challenging part of the initiator role is to be open to self-discovery. So I'll say to people, you know, it won't seem like it when you start, but if this goes well, you're probably going to learn something about yourself that you didn't realize before you started. And so coming into this with a desire or an openness to learn something about yourself is actually going to make the process go a whole lot better. And so when you're helping somebody focus on one issue, if you have a client or a hostile dependent couple that's all over the place, you might spend 20 minutes, 30 minutes sometimes with somebody getting really clear on what their concern is and what the issue is, so that they aren't all over the place. And especially when people start using this at home, you want them to check that their partner is willing to participate and they're not just all of a sudden dumping it on them and the partner is supposed to perform. So again, when they describe what the issue is, it's a description that comes without blame. And they may have more than one feeling about it. And they may have, you know, very contradictory feelings about it. And that's okay if they can slow things down enough to describe something with both sets of feelings about it. You know, somebody with a higher level of differentiation is going to potentially bring up the vulnerability that's underneath the initial feeling. Somebody, clients who have never allowed themselves to be vulnerable with each other are not going to go there initially. And that's to be expected. And that's part of the inquirer role, to help them be able to actually learn and go there. See, you're constantly helping initiators to avoid blame and to recognize that they have an important role to play in being heard by the other person. So often people will say, well, I just want to be understood, but what they're expressing is not very understandable. And it's maybe understandable by a therapist, but again, they can be all over the place and not be understood very well by their partners at all. And you want to emphasize the openness to self-discovery, because most of the time when somebody brings up an issue with their partner, they don't bring it up with a goal of learning something about themselves. They bring it up to negotiate, to get a behavior change, to, you know, unload anger or unload something that they're frustrated about. And it's one of the reasons why having a good time for a discussion like this is important, because when the discussion goes well, it's going to get them much farther than they would ever be able to have gotten before or gotten on their own. And sometimes I use these reminders to self, like, because part of that initiator role is there is some self-soothing and self-talk that goes into being a good initiator. And so, you know, you might be saying to somebody, this is about your own willingness to take a risk, to put out some vulnerable feelings that you haven't expressed before. Or to an inquirer, you might say, you know, this is going to be challenging for you because it's been hard for you to tolerate the differences between you. And this is going to be asking you to say that, you know, to talk to yourself as you listen, like, go slow, listen. Allow your partner to express what really, really matters to them. Now, sometimes, and this is, I don't want you to focus a lot on this, but sometimes it can help to have an initiator state their aim at the beginning. Like, my aim is to be understood. My aim is empathy. When they want an apology, that is a really different framework than initiator inquirer. And so if somebody is really fixed on getting an apology, doing the initiator inquirer is good for helping the other one understand why the apology matters and what it is they're looking for. But it's not usually a good moment right away to go straight for an apology. We've already said this, being open to self-discovery. And I love there's a lot of great Sally Forth cartoons, but this is one where she says to him, "I want your honest opinion, Ted." In other words, she wants him to be an honest initiator, and he's afraid. So he says, "Okay, but first you have to sign the release form," because he's afraid to actively initiate with her. So let me, Lisa, do you have any questions or comments or thoughts about what I've been saying?
Hello?
Yeah.
Lea, are you there?
And me.
Wait, let's take Leah first and then Lisa.
I'm sorry, Ellen. My audio cut out for a moment, so I didn't hear your question.
Oh, I just said, did you have any thoughts, reactions, questions to what I've been saying?
It's pretty clear. It's well laid out. And the thing that's sticking with me is that the initiator role is really a role of self-reflection.
Yeah.
And deepening self-understanding.
Yes, absolutely. Lisa, how about you?
Okay, yes, I don't think you could hear me before, I tried. Yes, it's very clear and very well laid out and very interesting, but I just lost a little bit because I was listening to all of the initiator role and I wasn't sure if you had made any definition of the inquirer role.
Not yet.
Didn't miss anything. We just hadn't got there yet.
Right, right.
Okay, perfect. Thank you.
Have either of you ever used this process?
No, not consciously.
Okay. Leah, how about you?
I haven't, but I'm ready to, I've been waiting. I've been waiting for this session and I plan to use it in the next week or two.
Great, great. If anybody else has a question at this point, go ahead and raise your hand and then Lincoln can let me know that you do. And I'll still keep going, but.
I don't see any yet, Ellen.
Okay. Well, just let me know if you do. I'm going to talk about the inquirer role now. And the inquirer is the listening partner, first of all. This is the person, when I'm describing it to a couple, I'll say, if you're the inquirer, it's your job, first of all, to listen actively. So that means you're staying awake, you're alert, you're paying attention. And when you don't understand something your partner is saying, you can stop them and ask questions for understanding. Sometimes I may ask you to recap to be sure that you are actually getting what your partner is saying. I don't use recapping all the time. It kind of depends on the level of the couple. And this next thing that I'm going to talk about for the inquirer, I don't do the first time I do it with really fighting angry couples either, because I know they won't be able to do it. But a good inquirer is able to ask questions until they really understand what's being said. And then they can respond with empathy and stay with empathy with the support of the therapist until they get to a soothing moment. Now, it takes a lot of internal capacity for somebody to be empathic, especially if they don't agree with what's being said to them. And to be empathic means that they can actually put their own reality aside and get into the reality of their partner, the experience, the emotional experience reality of the other person. And so in doing that, they then strive to say back in their own words what they really do get or why they get it or how they're hearing it so that the initiator feels understood. And again, to be able to do this, somebody has to not take things personally. They have to realize my partner is talking about themselves, their own world, their own reality, their own experience, and it's not about me. My partner is a separate person. They're different from me. They have their own experience. They have their own history. They have their own triggers. And this particular thing, whatever they're talking about, has been unsettling for them in some way, and it isn't about me. And I will say, when I'm telling people about the empathy part, I'll say, this is where you're really going to be challenged. And I'm glad to help you. I don't expect you to get it right the first time. Very few people do, because it isn't easy. And so let me help you and let me know when you need help. So I broke down some of the things that you might say if you're working with a person on any aspect of being a good inquirer. And when you're setting this up with a couple, especially at the very beginning, the first couple times you do it, as soon as somebody starts to break down in one of the roles, which is inevitable, it's going to happen, it's where you're going to come in and work with them pretty actively, because you want, number one, you want them to have a successful experience, if you can, the first time, couple of times. And you want to be using it to strengthen parts of themselves that are up till now not very strong. And so having your help is going to be very useful. So if you work with an inquirer and they start to, you know, interrupt, they're not listening, they're arguing, they're cross-complaining, you're going to have some work to do with that person just to help them be able to sit in the room and be able to listen without getting so agitated or without demanding attention for themselves. The kinds of questions that people ask are super important, because many inquirers will ask questions that have more to do with them with themselves than with their partners. They'll say things like, well, don't you think what you're talking about bothers me too? Would be a very common kind of thing you might hear. And so instead of staying interested and curious, they start to push their own point through the kinds of questions that they ask. And that's not going to ever result in a good outcome when they do that. You guys all know about recapping, and it's, you know, it's a good tool for the therapist when you think somebody's not hearing it very well or not getting it, and you ask them to recap, you'll be able to see yourself whether or not they're actually getting what's being told to them. Now, the empathy is the hardest part, because it has to do with putting yourself in somebody else's shoes. And it's where that quote from F. Scott Fitzgerald really holds up. Can somebody, you know, hold on to themselves, tolerate two competing views of reality or two competing views of an experience, and still be able to imagine what it's like for the other person? Now, when I do this exercise with people, especially when I'm first doing it, if they get to a really powerful, soothing moment, which sometimes happens and which is great and ideal when it happens, I really want them to stay with that experience. And my office is across the street from a park, and I'll ask people to just go take a walk together and enjoy the accomplishment and enjoy the connection. Because if they start to talk too much, they can undo it really fast. And so I'll say, you know, don't talk, just, you know, hold hands or just walk around the park for 10 minutes. And then if there's plenty of time, if there's time left, I'll tell them to come back in at that point. Or if it's just like 15 minutes left in the session, I'll say, I'd like to end that way today with you taking that time to be together and just let yourself feel what just happened and where you got to. You'll have this on your slides, but things that people as inquirers can actually say to themselves, these are good examples of things that they can use to soothe themselves. I'll come back to this. What I want to do is go to the case example that I sent. And this is for everybody to participate in. And I'm hoping that you won't cheat. So, Leah and Lisa, do you have this in front of you?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, I do.
Okay, great. So here's how this is going to work. I sent everybody two copies of this. The first one is a copy with a lot of blank spaces in it, and we're going to read it, and then we're going to stop at the blanks. And this is for everybody who's on the call to write down how you might respond at that moment. And please don't look at the one that has the answers that I did. I mean, there just happened to be one way to say things. But so how about if, Leah, can you be the female and Lisa, you be the male?
Yes.
So it would start, Lisa, with you. I mean, Leah, I'm sorry. Let's start with you, Leah.
Okay. Alrighty. It's about the next year. You're going to travel and be honored. It's wonderful. You've worked so hard for this. I want you to understand how I feel about not going.
I hear you saying that I'm not considering your feelings about something I'm doing. Is that what it is?
Not exactly. I want you to understand that this could be one of the best years of our lives, and I'm frustrated because it's not going to be that way. I'd like you to validate that that could be upsetting.
Do you have an assumption that this is supposed to be the best year of our lives?
Not the best year, but for you, you can go on all these trips as part of your position with the RQI, but I have to go to my superior and ask for time off without pay. It's frustrating. I'd like some empathy for my frustration.
Okay, how far do I go with questions before the empathy? I'd like to get through all this as soon as possible. I mean, I'm hearing things come so fast, I don't know where the hell this came from. In my problem-solving mind, I don't know what to do.
Okay, so he has essentially turned to me, and he's saying that to me. So will you guys take a minute and write down what you might say to him when he's saying that to you? And Lincoln, I'm going to be looking for some of the people who are listening to share, if that works.
Yes, and we have two people that have their hands up, Ellen. Karen and Rachel have their hands up from earlier, a little earlier.
Oh, okay. All right, well, let's see if I can let Karen talk. Karen? Are you there, Karen? Oh. Lincoln, I'll have you do it, I guess.
Hello. I butted in a bit early because I wanted to know about how you stopped the inquirer from asking questions, which pushed the partner into internal conflicts, personal shame, and to score points.
So that's a good question. And that's where the art of the therapy comes in, which is if a inquiring partner is asking questions that are inappropriate, disconnected, shaming, whatever it is, that's where you want to stop them and work with them about what is getting triggered in them that they're doing.
Yeah. I think I might respond by saying I think it's really important to hear what Mary's saying so that we can really understand what's happening for her.
Okay, great.
I will come back to you, but right now I'd just like to listen to Mary, something like that. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. No, that's good. That's really good.
I want to acknowledge that he has his own opinions, excuse me, but he needs to put them on hold. and how can we do that respectfully, you know?
Right. Great. Lincoln, who else? You want to do the other person who had their hand up?
I'm going to call on Rachel. Rachel, you there?
Did we lose you, Rachel?
Did you hear me?
Now we can.
Okay. Actually, I had put my hand up a little bit earlier when you talked about the initiator speaking and the listener person getting really activated and agitated in response to what the other person is saying.
Mm-hmm.
And I just had that happen recently where It's actually a little bit of a pattern that the husband wants to talk about his process, and he's a little bit intense and he talks fast, and I've been trying to help him sort of slow down and put more space into it. But his wife gets extremely activated and interrupts and blames and says, I'm being misrepresented, and she really doesn't have the capacity to contain herself, to listen, because she gets too upset. She left the room, she came back, and then she sat looking like she was about six. And so part of the trouble with that is the pattern is that she then I work with her, but in a couple's time, he ends up feeling kind of gypped, like he doesn't really get his time because she can't really hold on to herself enough to hear what he's trying to say. And I'm curious about what to do with she ends up having all the time.
So I'll make a suggestion to you right now, and then, which is when you have that kind of dynamic going on, sometimes it's very helpful to start with positive things. So to have like her tell him something positive that he does that's meaningful to her, and get him to be a really good inquirer if he can be. And then the same thing vice versa, so that they have an experience of digging deeper into things that are positive before they have to go and handle some of the things that are more challenging. Mm-hmm. And then a second suggestion is that when somebody has a really, really hard time like she does, you can also say, could we do 15 or 20 minutes where I sit in your chair? And I give you an example of how to ask the kind of questions that help your husband refocus so he can learn about himself. And will you watch? And then let me know your reaction to watching.
That's a really good idea.
And I mean, this kind of client that you just described, it takes a long time because you're talking about a very low differentiation level. You're talking about, you know, high emotional contagion, very much personalizing. And so it's going to take a lot of strokes when they're successful, mm-hmm. and a lot of, you know, feeding them lines, sometimes giving tools. We're going to be talking more in the next session when Catherine's on about some of the tools you can use to contain somebody too.
Okay. Yeah, that's helpful. One of the things I did want to throw in also that you had said before, like the really understanding the amount of setup that's required and educating ahead of time and helping them stay focused seems to be really, really important for this process to go smoothly.
Yes. Yeah. The setup and the taking time with the setup is, mm-hmm. is very important. So let's go back to this session, and what I want to be sure, I want to take the time if we can to go through this session, and then we'll wrap up for today. But in this, you know, where I stopped, what I said, and the example that was given by Karen was a really good example too, but I just said, what is the strongest feeling that you hear coming from your wife at this point? You know, what's clear and what has transpired so far is that this man is having difficulty with what his wife is expressing. And he's saying to me, you know, I want to get through this really quickly. And, you know, in my problem-solving mind, I just want to get through it. So it's challenging for him to sit with whatever emotions she might be expressing. And so I just said, what's the strongest feeling, to see if I could direct him back to getting interested in her feelings. So let's pick it up, Lisa, where he responds to number one. Whoops, Lisa's muted.
Okay, I'm unmuted. Mm-hmm. That I don't understand. Did you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay, great. Ignored. Ignored. Wait, he feels that her concerns don't matter to me.
Wait, one second. So what I said when he said that I don't understand is I said, that's your behavior, but I'm asking for the feeling that your wife is having. So again, I'm trying to see if we can go back to getting interested in what his wife is saying. So yeah, go ahead now, Lisa.
Ignored. She feels that her concerns don't matter to me.
Okay, so this is a question to everybody. What might you do at this point as he's struggling? And go ahead and raise your hand if you have a response or a thought as he's continuing to struggle in the role. Has anybody got their hand up? Oh yeah.
I've got a couple here.
Okay.
Virginia?
Do you hear me?
Yeah.
Well, I'd want to support that he followed my lead. I'd probably want to say something about, so your sense was your wife is feeling ignored. Can you give me any more feeling that comes to mind? Might just see if I could hold him in that space a little bit. And I might also say something about, this is the rough part, isn't it? This is tough. I appreciate you hanging in there.
Great. So supporting him in his trying and his working at it.
Yeah.
Do we have one more, Lincoln?
Let's see if we get...
Is it Karen, maybe?
Yeah. Karen?
Hello.
Yeah, go ahead.
Hello. I think I'd quickly validate him and say something like, so it's really difficult for you to hear her concerns right now. And then add another piece on, but I haven't quite thought that bit out yet. But I think maybe validating him that he's finding it difficult, but then bringing the focus back to her again.
Mm-hmm.
So what do you hear her saying? What is her strongest feeling right now? What do you think she's trying to say to you?
Yeah, so I really like what your guys are saying as you're trying, you know, you're working to keep him in tune with what she's expressing. What I happened to say to him in this session was, if you don't include yourself, if you don't bring yourself into it, even though she's talking about you, what do you hear her saying about herself? So that was, you know, that was an intervention for me around seeing if I could get more separation between self and other and, you know, see if he could stop feeling so personally challenged and attacked in some way by her. And then he responded by saying that she's frustrated and upset. And since we're running out of time, I'll tell you what I said here and then we'll pick it up. I said, so a question that you might ask her is, what are the feelings she'd like you to pay attention to? So again, trying to give him a way to have a question that he could ask her that would still keep things moving forward. So Lisa, can you pick it up and read?
Yeah. Okay, well, what are the feelings you'd like me to pay attention to?
Where is the... Did we lose? Leah?
My apologies. I had muted. I'm so sorry.
Okay.
That I'm feeling a loss at not being able to participate. I'd like you to say that you understand, that you can see I'm sad. I don't want you to fix it or solve it. Anger isn't what I'm feeling.
Lisa?
Oh, sorry. Sounds like you're disappointed.
That's it. That's a good word. I love my job and I have responsibilities there I want to meet and things I want in my personal life that are incompatible. I wish I could put my job on hold for the next 9 months, but I can't. I'm not disappointed in you. I'm so proud of you. I can hardly stand it, all you've accomplished.
I see. You looked forward to traveling with me and now that seems difficult and you feel disappointed.
That's right.
When do I deal with the logistics of what she's telling me? I need to get out the flip chart and solve it.
So then in the interest of time, I'll just read my part. I said, if you did that now, you'd miss out on hearing how important you are to her and how much she wants to share these things with you.
I'm not hearing it. Is that it?
Leah?
Oh, that's right. I've been in denial. I've known for the last 5 years that this year was coming, and I kept pushing it out into the future. I should have negotiated for time off a long time ago. Now I'm facing the loss, now that it's here.
And now I'm feeling sad. I've had it all wrong. All along, I've been thinking it was my traveling that was the problem. I'm surprised.
What are you feeling, Linda?
Better. I don't want a solution. I'm glad you know where I'm coming from in my heart.
And to him, what are you feeling?
Oh, much better. We've had this conversation for weeks, and I've always thought it was my fault that I wasn't being fair, leaving you behind.
So first of all, obviously, this is a fairly short example of one that happened the first time I did this with this couple. And what I want you to think about is, if you step back and you listen to what was going, each person and what was happening, what do you learn about each of them? Like, what do you learn that you then may carry forward?